All right, we're going to talk about worship this morning, and you can turn to Exodus 33. Exodus 33, it's on page 80. There in the Bibles in front of you. Just want to give you a little bit of a background here as we talk about worship. The one thing that we all need to realize is this, that God is a searcher, okay? God searches for worshipers. As a matter of fact, over in John chapter 4, verse 20 through about 25, Jesus is speaking to the woman at the well, and as she's speaking and he's talking, she brings up this subject, and she says, hey, you know, the Jews say you're supposed to worship in Jerusalem, and we say to worship on Mount Gerizim, which one is it? And Jesus gives this response back, and he says, you know, God is spirit, and those that want to worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. But he also says in there, God searches for worshipers. Now, I don't know if you've ever been aware of that or not, but this isn't one of those things that's just kind of an add-on, that God searches for people that will worship him and will follow him. And so as he's speaking with this woman, what I love about this part is this. While in the contemporary church today, we've had a lot of battles over worship style. If you've not been around church that much, you may not know that, but there's this huge battle over which way are we supposed to worship? Are we supposed to be traditional? Are we supposed to be contemporary? Are we supposed to be ultra contemporary? What would be called kind of a postmodern style of worship? Are we supposed to be what is now being branded as kind of a new global approach? Okay, this is the first what they call global generation where everybody's tied in together, all right? So which one are we supposed to be? And what's unique about that passage over in John 4 is this. You know what the woman at the well is asking? What style and where and how are we to worship? And the annoying part of Jesus kicks in where he never answers sometimes your questions, okay? You ever notice that throughout Scripture that someone asks God a question or someone asks Jesus a question and he never answers that question? But he really does. Because she says, hey, listen, here's what I want to know. You're a prophet of God. You Jews say Jerusalem. We say Mount Gerizim. Which one is it? In other words, which style, which location is the best? And here's what he says. Those that want to worship God must worship God in spirit and in truth. You know what Jesus says? It's not about style. It's not about location. If you get warm fuzzies because you walk into a traditional service, I would say to you, that doesn't necessarily mean that's God. As a matter of fact, what I would say to you is this. It's not. That's your emotions. If you walk into a contemporary service and you're like, oh, they played my favorite song this morning. I was able to worship God. I would say, no, you just had a religious experience. Did you know that I can take music, it doesn't matter what kind that it is, and if it's done extremely well, people will walk away saying this, I felt like I had a religious experience. I mean, those that love orchestras, man, if it's done well, they will even make that kind of comment. Man, it's just like a euphoria. It's just like a religious experience. And I say to them, you're exactly right. It's exactly what it was. The problem is that within our churches, we have so worshiped style rather than God that we walk away and we go, it was the most incredible what? Religious experience. And so I want us to look at that in the light of Exodus chapter 33. We sang the song this morning that correlates with what is going on here. And we're going to start in verse 7. It was Moses' practice to take the tent of meeting and set it up some distance from the camp. Everyone who wanted to make a request of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. Whenever Moses went out to the tent of meeting, all the people would get up and stand in the entrances of their own tents. They would all watch Moses until he disappeared inside. As he went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and hover all at its entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. When the people saw the cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, they would stand and bow down in front of their own tents. Inside the tent of meeting, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. Afterwards, Moses would return to the camp, but the young man who assisted him, Joshua son of Nun, would remain behind in the tent of meeting. One day Moses said to the Lord, "You've been telling me, take these people to the promised land, but you haven't told me whom you will send with me. You have told me, I know you by name, and I look favorably upon you. If it is true that you look favorably upon me, let me know your ways so I may understand you more fully and continue to enjoy your favor. And remember that this nation is your very own people." The Lord replied, "I will personally go with you, Moses, and I will give you rest. Everything will be fine for you." Then Moses said, "If you don't personally go with us, don't make us leave this place. How will anyone know that you look favorably upon me, and your people, if you don't go with us? For your presence among us sets your people and me apart from all the other people on the earth." The Lord replied to Moses, "I will indeed do what you have asked, for I will look favorably upon you, and I know you by name." Moses responded, "Then show me your glorious presence." The Lord replied, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will call out my name, Yahweh, before you. For I will show mercy to anyone I choose, and I will show compassion to anyone I choose. But you may not look directly at my face, for no one can see me and live." The Lord continued, "Look, stand near me on this rock. As my glorious presence passes by, I will hide you in the crevice of the rock and cover you with my hand until I've passed by. Then I will remove my hand and let you see me from behind, but my face will not be seen." Now, let me just kind of back up here so that you kind of know what's going on. In the previous chapter, God had become angry with the people of Israel because while Moses was up on the mountain getting the Ten Commandments, all right, while he was getting those, the people down below got a little nervous, didn't know what was going on with Moses, wasn't sure if he was going to return, so that's when they put together the golden calf. And if you kind of remember that's what's going on. So they started worshiping this calf, and that's what they did. So God became angry, and here's what he said at the end of chapter 32. "Moses, take your people and go to the promised land, and I'm going to send an angel of the Lord before you, but I will not be going with you." And this is what precipitates that meeting. Now, what God had also done is he provided this tent. And with this tent, he told Moses, "This is where you will come to meet me face to face." This is God's name for it, the tent of meeting. This is not man's name for it. This is God's name for it. He's the one that said, "This is the tent of meeting." Now, here's what you and I need to know, and I gleaned this from a professor friend of mine. His name is Dr. Bruce Leifblad, and he's one of our foremost professors of theory of worship and how God meets us and things like that. And he said for years, as he studied this passage, he always translated in his mind that the tent of meeting was just kind of like a noun, you know, it was just a place. Or it was at most an activity. And he said all these years of studying that passage, he never noticed this. And it was like God finally revealed it to him. And there it was in Scripture, and he'd always missed it. It's an active participle. And what it means is this: a continual place for God to meet. And what he realized was this wasn't an event. It wasn't a noun. It was a continual place for God to meet. Now, I don't know about you. A lot of times when I hear the word meeting, it's not exactly high on my agenda of things I want to be a part of. You know, when you hear, "Hey, we're going to have a meeting at work," I doubt you go, "All right, man, I've missed those. You know, when can we do more of these," right? When we hear a meeting, that's usually not a good thing. It's usually boring. Unless it's like, "Hey, we're going to unveil a brand new thing at your work," you know, and then you're going, "Oh man, this probably means job cuts," right? So it never has a good connotation to it. But what God had said was this: this was the tent of meeting that if anybody had a problem, anybody had an issue, anybody wanted to know what was on God's heart, this is where you went to. And all the people would watch as Moses would go to the tent of meeting. And so this wasn't just a place, it was bigger than that. It wasn't just an event, it was bigger than that. It was active. It was an involvement. It was an invitation by God to join him. You know what's really wonderful about God, and as you study through Scripture with worship, if you know anything about God's invitations, the interesting thing is that they're never really to a list of rules. It's always to a place. You ever notice that? Here it is with a tent. In other words, Moses, come to my house. When you invite people over, man, it's a special deal, isn't it? You don't just invite anybody. It's a special time. And I don't know about you, but when I go over to somebody's house and they invite me over to somebody's apartment or something like that, it's like it changes the dynamics of the relationship. Suddenly you kind of know them a little bit better. The barriers are down. The walls are down. You kind of see them for who they are. And it's not just the God of the Old Testament that does this. What does Jesus say? Come to my table. Where do we find Jesus in the last days that we're about to take of later on in the service with communion? What was that known as? The last what? Supper. Here's this God who is about communion, and not just communion like when we take the Lord's Supper, but communion. In other words, he's saying, come close. I want you to know me. And here it is. It says that Moses spoke to God as a friend does, face to face. And if we fast forward to the end of time, when we go as followers of Jesus Christ to be with him in heaven, there's two things with worship that we see in Revelation. The first one is around the throne, but the second one is what? What did Jesus say? I will not drink of this cup until everyone is gathered together. You know what he's saying? There will not just be worship around the throne. There's going to be worship as we commune face to face. George Barna is a leading researcher within the Christian world. You may have even heard his name come out and say the Barna research indicates this or that. And he went to churches, and what he did was with his team, a very thorough research, and asked people as they were leaving out the door of Sunday worship services, and so they went all across America, and they asked people as they were leaving, do you think you met with God today? And you know that most people said, no. And he's like, well, why didn't you meet with God today? Some people just, I don't know. Never thought about it. And other people say, well, you know, the worship time didn't go real well, and they had some problems, and they didn't sing the kind of style, or the pastor did okay, but it was a little boring. And Barna's research concluded that the majority of Americans, and I'm talking about the vast majority of Americans, who go to church on a Sunday morning, leave there thinking they did not meet God. Which means they didn't. Because I've never met anybody who's ever met with God that left bored. And a lot of times we put it off on, you know, Jeremy, right? It's Jeremy's fault, you know, he hit a wrong chord and that just messed up my whole worship, you know. Hate it when he does that, you know. He did my favorite song, but he didn't do it the way they did it on the radio. And that really messed me up, right? Or we go into a traditional service and we go, oh man, they came out playing the organ. And when they rolled that baby out there, I knew I wasn't going to be able to worship this morning. I want you to know that if that is your mode of worship, you will never, ever, ever meet with God. Because if you're caught up in style, what you like and dislike, whether you thought the message was good or bad, whether you thought it was funny or serious or sad, if it was traditional, you're not going to meet with God because you won't find God in a style. That's not where he's found. Now then, are there some things that help me to worship better? Yes. Are there some things that help me to focus? Absolutely. But I want you all to know this morning that when I go into a traditional church, I don't go in there with disdain like, oh, well, we do an ultra contemporary thing, and don't you wish you were in a comedy club like us, you know? Don't you wish you could worship like us? You know, that's arrogance. But when I go in, I go, if they're going to play the organ, I would prefer it to be really loud because that's really cool. You know what I'm saying? You know when it shakes things? I'm like, that's really cool, you know? Somebody way back when realized, okay, if we're going to play this, let's play it really loud, all right? And so I loved going to a traditional service. And I loved when they get out. But here's what I want. I do want them to take their worship seriously. I do want them to prepare. I do want them to come with a serious expectation that we're going to give our very best to God. And so I will tell you, the only place that I really feel like a mighty fortress is our God should be played is in a traditional service with the loudest organ on the planet, okay? Because I don't think a contemporary group can pull that one off. I just don't. I'm just like, go ahead and try, dude, but you're going to come way short. And so I love it when they play that because I'm like, yes, it deserves to be played loud, you know? To play a mighty fortress soft, are you kidding? You know, a mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never. I'm like, you must be joking. And then those without Christ walk in and go, why is a mighty fortress sound like a wimpy, you know, sandcastle? What is this? And then the looks on our faces look like somebody shot our dog last night, you know? Somebody kicked the cat. It's just a rough time, and it's like, why would anybody be attracted to that? And so what I say to people is this, if you're going to be traditional, man, go all out. Do it with excellence. But you ought to be acting like you're preparing people to help them meet God. If you're going to do a contemporary service, great, go all out, but do it with excellence. Do it to the best of your ability. Make sure people know that you expect them to meet God this morning. And so the question that I have for each and every one of us is when you approach on Sunday morning, is your expectation that you're going to meet God? Because if your expectation is not there, you will get exactly what you asked for, which is nothing. I've never met with God in which I've left there going, oh man, I want less of that. Wow, I met God this morning, but oh, that was kind of icky and I don't ever want that. What I found out is, the more I experience of God, the more that I want. Did you notice in this passage what happens? When Moses would go in, what did the whole nation do? They went out into their front of their tents, and what did they do? They worshiped as well. You know what it tells us? If we're going to be a nation that worships, the leaders need to be worshiping. You know how you teach worship? You teach it in the home. It's right there in Scripture. Now, not everybody grew up in a home where there was worship. I get that, but what I'm saying is where God really wants it to be taught is in the home, not just at church. If your view of church is, I'm going to go there so that my kids can be taught there and everything else, I'm going to say to you, you're dead wrong. Don't you put that expectation upon the church because that's not in here. It's very clear what we're supposed to be doing. What I tell parents all the time is let me tell you what the church is. The church is a supplement to what you're already doing in the home. I don't know about you, but I don't just take vitamins all day long and never just eat broccoli. I don't really care much for broccoli. Steamed broccoli is kind of okay, but you put some cheese on anything and I can eat it, right? Okay, I mean, it doesn't matter what. You just put some cheese on there. Sure, I can eat that. You know, I'm fine with it. Put a lot on there. But I want you to know I don't just pop vitamins all day long and say I got the 100% USRDA, I should be healthy. You know the way parents sometimes treat the church and we treat the church? That we're just going to pop vitamins all day long. It's like, no. No. We're the supplement to what you're already doing in the home. And then as the church, what we need to do is to do what God's heart is, and that is his heart is for the orphans and widows. You know what that means? As a church, when there isn't that parental leadership and there isn't that parental help, those are the people that we spend a lot of time with. Those are the people that as those little kids come in, they don't have that parental involvement that will help them along in their spiritual pilgrimage, those are the people that we spend a lot of time with. But I should never look at this church or any church as being, well, I wonder what they're going to do for Josiah. Well, I hope that they're going to do some things for him, and I'm going to challenge them that, hey, you know, I need you to do some things on Sunday morning while my kids are here. They're teaching and learning scripture and all those other things. Absolutely, that needs to be in place. But I'm not just going to dump it all on them and say, fix my kid. I was a youth pastor for 18 years. Can't tell you how many parents came to me basically asking the question, can you fix my kid? And I'd look at them and say, no. Let me just get right to it. No. How many hours a week do you spend with them? How many hours a week do I have with them? Maybe two at the most is what I have with them. And I'm supposed to, you know, give them some Bible verse and say, if you'll just read that right there, you're going to be all right. Now, I would work with those parents, but I usually challenge them. I usually said, I'm going to work with you guys because you're in the home all the time. I'm not there. I don't know everything that's going on. They can clean up their act around me for a couple hours a week, but they're real in the home, right? We're all real in the home. We can't fake there. They can fake around me. So let me ask you that question again. What's your expectation? Is your expectation to meet God? Because if it's not, you're going to find church real boring. You're going to say, man, I don't know. It just wasn't my thing. Our expectation is to meet God, not a style. What I love about God is, through this passage, is he's calling us to a relationship. Not to a list of rules or regulations, but he's calling us to a relationship. And a lot of people say, here's what they'll say to me, yeah, but I'm no Moses. I'm like, well, you didn't read scripture very well. Because it said, if anybody wanted to meet with the Lord, that would mean you. And a lot of times we put up on the pedestal these spiritual giants, you know, Moses and Daniel and Esther and all these people in there, and you know something, there are people just like you, had struggles just like you. But here's the point I want to make with you this morning. This is your GPS. It comes in the form of a question. When will Jesus be enough? When will he be enough? Why is it Jesus plus a style? Why is it Jesus plus a place? Why is it Jesus plus this type of feeling that I have to have in order to... When will Jesus be enough? Man, I've been challenged in my heart recently. When will Jesus really be enough for me? What if nothing else happens? See, because did you notice what Moses said to God? God said to him, take your people, go on ahead. You're going to conquer everybody you were supposed to conquer. You're going to go to the promised land. I'm going to send the angel of the Lord ahead of you. But Moses, I'm not coming with you. And you know what Moses said to him in essence? I'd rather be disobedient and have your presence than to be obedient and not have your presence. Because here's what Moses knew. The very best God has to offer you and me and even to Moses is his presence, not his presence as in P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S. And you know what we're usually after? A lot of us would have been okay with God saying, go on ahead. Go ahead. You're going to go to the promised land. You're going to get everything you ever dreamed of and more, but I'm not going with you. And some of us would have been okay with that. The land flowing with milk and honey, man, all that you've ever dreamed of, every battle that you can ever face in life, you're going to conquer. You're going to have it good. You're going to be on easy street. That's what God's telling Moses. That's what he's telling us. And then we have to answer this question. Are we after his presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E, or his presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S? When will Jesus be enough? And Moses said, no. So why do we worship? That's the question. Why do we worship? Why do we sing songs? Why do we stand up, sit down, have a prayer, do a message? Did you notice what Moses said? How will the world know of your presence if we go ahead without you? You know why we worship? Because you and I, as followers of Christ, carry the essence and nature of God. Do you know why your heart needs to be in worship? Not just on a one-hour thing on a Sunday morning. I don't want to just boil it down to that, but that's the way we usually think. Do you know why your life needs to be about worship? Not just on a Sunday morning, but certainly including Sunday morning. So that we can carry the essence and nature and presence of God. Because the presence of God is the very best that God has to offer everyone. And Moses knew it. If we go ahead without you, how will they know? If we don't have your favor, how will they know? The challenge to my heart, and I hope the challenge to your heart, is to understand this. We worship God. Moses worshiped God. The people worshiped God to take upon his nature, not to have it for themselves, but so that it would be on display for everyone around them. Is that who you are? Is Jesus enough? Do you desire the presence of God more than you do the presences of God? I'm going to tell you, man, I'm usually guilty of that. Sometimes I don't do so good. I got to have the next thing, you know, the next big religious moment. And that's really all it is a religious moment. It's not a relationship moment. There's a vast difference because God is calling us to relationship, not to religion. What does it take for you to have an expectation to meet God on a daily basis? When will Jesus really be enough? When will you desire his presence so much that the stuff doesn't matter? Because that's what it means to worship in spirit and in truth. And God calls us not to a place or a location or a style or a euphoria or religious experience. He calls us to relationship with him. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. I don't know about you, but as I studied for this message this week, my heart was really convicted. Because I'm like, wow. Do I really just want Jesus? I mean, is that really what I'm after, is Jesus? Am I really after God to meet with me? Or is it, yeah, God, that's great. You know, I kind of had a good moment here, but hey, I got some questions about life here. I got to have some answers. Hey, tell me what's happening tomorrow. What do I do with a job? What do I do with a mate? What do I do with this? What do I do with that? Okay, now I got a new child. Now what do I do? Man, we're just looking for answers, answers. And Moses said, God, I hate to tell you no, but I'm not going from here and leaving your presence. Is that where we're at this morning? Is that where I'm at? When will Jesus be enough? We're going to come to the time of communion this morning as we take the Lord's Supper together. And my prayer for you is this, that I've known some people that have to have communion in order for them to really feel like that they've met God. And I will tell you that that's just a religious experience. Now, can it be a meaningful experience? Absolutely. But if you have to have something in order to worship, there's a problem. There shouldn't be a crutch to help you worship. And so this morning, when God calls us to communion, it's not just the bread and the wine or the bread and the grape juice. Jesus is saying, come to my table. Come to me face to face. And so maybe this morning is a visual for you as you worship through communion, that maybe you can think of it in that way. That yes, it represents the body and the blood of Christ. Absolutely. But it's more than that. Jesus is saying, come close. Come to my table. Come close as a friend does. Come meet with me. And so maybe in your mind as you take communion this morning, that maybe you can just see Jesus and whatever you think Jesus may look like, just looking at you and saying, when will I be enough? When will I be enough? And that we meet God here this morning. We're going to sing a song here in just a minute, and during that time, you can feel free to make a line to come down here. I will just tell you in advance, we ran out of the clear cups, so if you see some darker cups at the back, and you're wondering, what is that? If you get to that point and the other cups are out, just take one of those that has grape juice in it, just the same as the other, okay? It's a little different, but just warning you so that you know. I think the beauty of that is it proves what we've been talking about this morning, when we shouldn't have to have a certain thing, okay? Shouldn't have to have that. And so I would invite anybody that wants to come during this time, if you're a follower of Christ, or maybe this morning you've decided to follow Christ, man, this would be the perfect way to start out that relationship of coming to Christ's table of communion. And to take that juice and to take that bread and just to focus in on what God has for us, a meeting with God this morning. Jeremy, are we going to sing Heart of Worship this morning? Just to give you a backdrop to this song, sometimes we sing songs, we're like, I don't know why that was written, and I think anytime you don't know why, you miss it. The song was actually written out of a heart cry in England where a group of believers were together, and the pastor just felt like they were missing the essence of worship and what it was really all about, and what he did was he walked into staff meeting and he fired the band. He told them, you're laid off for a period of time. So they came to gather the next week. There's no instruments, no song leader, no nothing. And man, it was awkward. I mean, just awkward. Next week, no band, no songs, no nothing. Everybody's like, man, this is really weird. Next week, same thing. And finally, people would, you know, kind of read some scripture aloud, and other people would kind of start a song, and they would kind of worship together that way. But they did it, you know, from the group out there, not the group up here. And the song was written about 5 months into that point about coming back to the heart of worship. And that's why it talks in there about, I'll bring you more than a song. For a song in itself is not what you desire. And so as we sing this together, if you don't know this song, the words will be up here. I believe that we've got those. Maybe it'll kind of help you this morning to kind of discover that heart of worship.